I love exploring the intersection of Buddhist thought, which is 2,500 years old and dates back to the Indus Valley in ancient India near the border of India and Nepal, with contemporary ideas, findings in such domains as neuroscience and philosophy and psychology. Tonight I'm going to talk about one of the 20th century's most interesting psychiatrists, psychologists, a guy by the name of Donald Winnicott. He's more popularly known as D.W. Winnicott, and he came up with so many interesting ideas, but I'm just going to talk about one, which was his pioneering work on what is authentic behavior and what is inauthentic behavior, and how it intersects with Buddhist thought, and how the two, when reflected on in tandem, offer us a set of powerful tools for healing and for integrating our mind with perhaps areas of our lives that we haven't explored. So when we're infants, the idea goes, infants are very well aware of how dependent they are on their caretakers. They are very well aware that every single need for food, for clothing, for shelter, for medicine, for security, is completely dependent upon being provided by the caretakers around them. The infant that's been proposed by a child psychiatrist basically fears the most dreadful fear that an infant has is not being aggressively shouted at. What it's most frightened of is complete lack of attention. For an infant, not being seen is brings on a fear of almost, to put it mildly, annihilation. Because the infant knows that its survival is dependent upon being seen and recognized by the caretakers around it. So as infants, all of our interpersonal strategies and behaviors that we develop are attention getting. Primarily, we are trying to be seen. And when we are not given emotional mirroring or a sense of being recognized, those behaviors, those actions are often abandoned and disavowed. Now, as we develop into behaviors and actions, kids maintain that hypervigilance, that hyper-awareness on is what they're doing being seen and supported by the caretakers around them. So, for example, if we're lucky and if we're a child and we manifest certain tendencies, masculine or feminine, athletic or creative, musical, aggressive, fearful, flirtatious, whatever behaviors we manifest, we not only act out on them, but then we see how they are registered by the caretakers around us, whether the caretakers notice us and support us, or whether we feel unsupported, unrecognized, unseen. So when we act out on a behavior and our mother or our father gives us a negative response, we're very, very likely to disavow those behaviors, even though they might be very authentic. Often, parents reinforce what's known as gender appropriate, which is horrifying, behavior. They want their boys to act in certain ways and their girls to act in certain ways. Occasionally, parents have agendas for what they want their children to manifest. They want, in my case, my parents were both artists. It was very important for them that I manifest creative behaviors. They really didn't have any interest that I demonstrate any skills in math. Certainly outdoorsman skills, my dad privileged, although I had none of them. I didn't really have a lot of athletic ability, although my dad would have loved that. And so part of the agenda when we see that certain behaviors, even though they're not natural, they're not authentic, are rewarded, we develop what's known as counterfeit or compliant behaviors, which are basically we do whatever the fuck gets rewarded, even though they're not natural. These behaviors we don't do spontaneously. We don't do because we truly, deeply enjoy the feeling of doing these behaviors. We do it because we see rewarded for them. So that's an inauthentic behavior. An authentic behavior is something we do spontaneously because we enjoy it, because it feels good, because it is something that comes almost naturally. But a lot of our authentic behaviors we disavow simply because they are not rewarded or actively discouraged by the caretakers around us. So, is that clear so far? Okay. Now, not all inauthentic behaviors are bad. Most children don't naturally give or clean up their rooms or, you know, learn how to type. My mom was very big on typing. I had no inner authentic need to type. It's not something that I truly enjoyed or spontaneously would have done. But it actually was very helpful, and she bribed me. She said she would buy me the bass guitar, which I craved if I would learn how to type when I was relatively young. And so sometimes inauthentic behaviors, giving, paying attention to tasks and stuff like that, is good in the long run, and we want them to be rewarded. We don't want all of our behaviors to be entirely authentic, because guess what? A lot of authentic behaviors aren't so good either. Kids, when they don't get the attention they want or the things they want, they'll often scream. They'll stamp their feet, they'll stop eating, they'll run around into traffic. They'll do things that are utterly not helpful. So we also want to have some of our authentic behaviors disavowed or we want to shed them. We don't want to maintain them. The goal is to have a healthy balance. Unfortunately, and Winnicott said the only thing we need are caretakers that are good enough. Good enough. Which means that enough of our authentic behaviors are rewarded that we'll feel confident in life, that every time we have an authentic desire or craving, that we'll feel okay about exploring them. If we don't have good enough parenting, speaking from some experience in this domain, we don't feel as confident in acting out on our authentic or our drives. And we often need to find constant reassurance from people around us before we take the risk of exploring anything. And anything that doesn't get met with approval, we abandon because we don't have that inner confidence. So, very often, even if our parents are mirroring and supportive, still we wind up going off into the world where there's schools and institutions and other kids. And very often in those arenas, authentic behaviors are beaten out of us. And we wind up adopting inauthentic. If you're a young guy and you have to successfully socially integrate yourself with other young guys, you're going to have to manifest, even though it might not be natural, you're going to have to manifest sometimes very cold, hyper-masculine, tough personality traits to get rewarded by the other guys around you. And these behaviors can become very ingrained. The behaviors that we're rewarded for, we can, what's known as introject, and hold them very dear. We can believe that they're truer than even the most core authentic behaviors that manifested in our lives earlier. One of the most humorous things was my dad, for some reason, always tried to tell me that it would be a good idea to join the army. I'm like the least... And when I quizzed him, in fact, his time in the army was a horrifying series of years where he was in the brig all the time, arrested for one offense after the other, and he wound up leaving the army addicted to drugs. It was a disaster. But because he so believed that it was a manifestation of what a real man was, he wanted other people to do it, and he wanted to be recognized for something that was, in essence, a disaster for him. Very often, the inauthentic behaviors that we apply in our lives to try to get recognition, love, rewards, approval, success, we demand that others recognize them, even though we're only doing them for external rewards. There's nothing internally that really feels good about it. Very often people in their 40s and 50s, at the height of their success, holding the trophies and awards that come with long careers, stand up with these rewards and feel completely empty and completely hollow, because nothing that they've done is deeply authentic. They followed a path that is not truly deeply registering at their core. They followed what other people have told them is the right path. And then when you get to a place in your life where you're looking for what's the meaning, why have I lived, what's the purpose for this, we've been acting, performing. We've been trying to get approval. It's only the acts that we do specifically, spontaneously, because they feel good in our core, that register deeply, that can give us a sense of deep fulfillment. Thankfully, a lot of acts that start off as performative, like being generous and compassionate, we can actually learn to deeply appreciate these. But many of the inauthentic acts, the career successes, the chases for approval, the chases for getting attention, can feel hollow. I've read wonderful interviews with comedians who say, you know, really, I'm not that funny. I don't even like performing. It's just that's the way I got the attention from my parents when I was young. And so they build these careers based on attention-seeking and performance, but it feels hollow. Of course, the problem is that if we risk dropping or putting more, dropping to a certain extent these inauthentic behaviors and try out exploring creative endeavors or explore any endeavors that feel more driven, more from the core, what we risk is feeling completely rejected by others. Because our core memory is when we acted true from the heart, we often didn't get the love and approval that we wanted from the people around us. So it can feel deeply frightening to explore elements of ourselves. Some people wind up having families, even though deep in their core, they don't really even want to have kids. I've met them. It's shocking to me. It's shocking that somebody would undertake bringing a life into this world and the, you know, all the commitment and have that not be something that's a core, authentic, deeply felt urge. But it happens. It happens, unfortunately, quite frequently. So, and sometimes it doesn't just rest in the domain of behaviors. Sometimes people's bodies can become inauthentic. Men can become pumped up, hyper masculinized. I don't know if that's a word. You ever go to a gym? They're like, you don't need to make that sound. Yeah, it's not helping you lift that weight. It really isn't. It's just, look at me. I'm a man. Yeah. Look at me. I'm a man. Can you see me? I can barely go to those places. And unfortunately, sometimes the false body can wind up in anorexia. People can wind up with body dysmorphia. These really exaggerated ideas of what beauty is. In an attempt, sometimes young children are only rewarded by being flirtatious with their fathers, by being coquettish. And then later on in life, the only way they can confidently feel they can get a partner that loves them is by becoming overly sexualized all the time in their relationships. So you get the idea. These inauthentic, learned behaviors that help us get attention often can become sabotaging. They can sabotage the body, they can sabotage the personality, they can deform the personality so that we totally emphasize, in my family, one of the things that was rewarded was self-reliance. My parents really rewarded the sense that everything was okay. It didn't matter if your life was falling apart and it was patently obvious to everyone. If you came and reported that everything was under control, then it was fine. They wouldn't give you a hard time. They'd leave you alone. And so in my own life, it became very important to constantly, even though during the years I was falling apart with addictions, it was very important that I told everybody around me, it's okay, I got it under control. Because I had learned that that was the way you survived. That was the way you got positive attention. And that if you asked for help, in fact, what you got was messy, controlling, awkward. It didn't feel good. So I picked up this very, very strong, inauthentic tendency to always tell people that everything was okay when things were not okay at all at various points. So again, to open up to acting, to speaking truths, to manifesting things that are deeply felt, to acting out on desires, is very risky because for so many years, we've bought into the myth that only a certain set of behaviors are acknowledged and rewarded by the world. And that might be true. Some of the things we want to do might not be that rewarded. When I use the example of I learned to skateboard when I was 46. And believe me, nobody rewards you for doing that. People think that you're insane. There's nobody going to be at the end of the block with a wreath and a, you know, a camera and, like, you know, the oldest asshole to learn. No. So part of the beauty of Buddhist spiritual practice is that we can develop techniques to reward ourselves for taking risks in life, for acting out from authentic feelings, from speaking things that are true but we find scary. It's worth noting that when we abandon or disavow some of our core feelings, for instance, if we're a young boy and we have any effeminate or non-masculine tendencies and we disavow them, when we disavow something, there's a sense of hollowness that is registered somatically in the stomach and in the chest. We hold our feelings of abandonment and sadness in the core areas of functioning in the body, the breath and in the digestive areas. When we lose something or we turn our backs on something that's very core to our personality, there's this felt sense of emptiness. Likewise, if we're a young girl and we have any behaviors or desires or abilities that are drummed out of us, again, there's this feeling of loss, this feeling of emptiness, hollowness in the stomach and in the chest. So when years later and we develop a meditative practice and we spend time sitting, focusing on the body, one thing that begins to develop over time is we begin to be aware of not just the normal contractions in the muscles of the arms and the legs and the back that carry our day-to-day stress. But we also will become often aware of deeper held somatically expressed feelings that have always been there, that we've sort of been aware of, but we've never paid that much attention to. We might feel a sense of discomfort in behind the sternum. We might feel this sense of choking in the base of the neck, or a sense of solidity and constant tightness in the belly. These are held feelings often of core abandonments, rejections, disavowals, repression. And what's useful is that with Winnicott, the only way we could express and get access to these disavowed feelings he practiced was in the safe holding environment of therapy. But actually, that while that's true, we can also do it in our practice. We can also begin to feel into these areas where we've been holding this sense of perhaps containment. I can't act out on this. This is unrewarded. People don't like this part of me. And we can feel into this, and we can open to the feelings that are waiting to be acknowledged. There is a wonderful part in Jack Kornfield's book, A Path with Heart, where he talks about when he had just become a monk, he had this feeling of hollowness in his chest. And at first, he thought it was simply a feeling of missing his girlfriend. But when he sat with it during the extended meditations that a monk is afforded, he, as he felt into this hollowness, he began to be aware that, in fact, the images that were arising were the feelings of never being loved or supported by his family. And that by becoming a monk and acting out truly on something that was his own urge, not a socially rewarded urge, not something that other people were going to be approve of, he was risking again being abandoned, being not loved, being not supported. So when we begin to become aware of these desires or these feelings, when we consider acting out, speaking our truths, exploring our creative desires, whatever they are, there's going to be this feeling of, oh no, I'm not going to be supported. People are not going to love me for this. And it's very important to have an awareness that's compassionate, kind, gentle, that can look at these held emotions and say, it's okay. It's okay. I'm here. I'm here. I can support you. When we can give ourselves support, it lessens that need to get approval from the people around us and the world. It gives us a greater courage to act out on ideas or feelings that as children we disavowed because they weren't rewarded, because the other kids were like, what? Why do you want to do that? Our parents were like, I don't get that. Now we have somebody on our side. It's our own awareness. We can be there. We can acknowledge every time we take a risk. This is why very often in the metta meditation that I lead at the end of classes, I say, let's take a moment and acknowledge all the skillful things that we've done, the times we've acted out of virtue or generosity or kindness or compassion. We take a moment and feel good about this. Because what we're developing when we do that is an awareness that can make us feel recognized. That's what we're looking for in life. When we take a risk, we're looking for a sense of recognition. And the feeling or the need that it has to be from somebody else almost invariably will leave us at times feeling not seen. Because even if you have somebody who's very supportive and very loving in your life, they might be in a fucking bad mood that day. They might be busy. They might have their own shit going on. They might not be available. So we need to cultivate this ability to reward ourselves for taking risks in life, for trying new things. The good news is that the wider a support group you have, whether it's in a 12-step community or in a Buddhist community or in any support group, the more you make connections, the greater your opportunity is to find support. And that's really important too. It's wonderful to cultivate a rewarding awareness. It's fundamental, in fact. But it's also really helpful to have a support group that will say, hey, that's great. Most of life, when you say, hey, you know what I did today? I actually tried to cook something. You know, people go, oh. I don't know why you're telling me that. So, but if you have a support group, you get that sense of acknowledgement that even though most other people might not get it, there's still somebody there who shares and understands how important it was that you took that risk, that you dared to do something that had been greeted with fear for so long. So I think that's all I have on the topic of the intersection between the inauthentic, the authentic, and how Buddha's practice can be of use with that. I hope there was something worthwhile to ponder in that. I thank you for your attention.